to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
There we go, excellent. Welcome to Shoot the Defence and a very special Africa Cup of Nations preview, also known as AFCON. There we go. I'm your host, Stel, and joining me this evening, one of us making his long-awaited return to the show, he's our African football correspondent, Joseph Lesor. Mate, it's been absolutely too long.
Way too long.
I know you're losing my words, it's been that long.
I know you miss me, man. It's okay.
Mate, how have you been? You've been good.
It's all great, man. It's all great. How about you, man?
Yeah, I'm listening.
You guys been doing a madness, man.
We try. Thanks to the listeners that we are where we are at the moment. So, yeah. I didn't say this off air, but last time I saw you, you could bench about 170. Now you can probably bench about four cars. What have you been doing with yourself?
Oh, my. So, Jim has taken a bit of a backseat, to be fair. But, you know, I went today after work. So, you know, maybe we'll get to the 170 again, 180. I'm joking.
Man, like I said, you look like you could bench a couple of cars there, man.
Oh, man, I'm just going to laugh at it because I know I can't.
You will one day, don't worry. Excellent, mate. Now, our next guest is making his debut on Shoot the Defence. He's not nervous, which is good. He's a football reporter for independent newspapers in South Africa, Jambulo Njidi. Mate, great to have you on the show. Thanks for your time. I know you're an hour ahead in South Africa, but thank you ever so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, man. It's good to be here.
That's fantastic, mate. I'll tell you what, when I first saw you wearing that shirt, I thought it was Celtic for some reason. I don't know why. I really don't know why it's not Celtic. There you go. I'll tell you what,
Sorry? I'm saying it could be the hint of greenish type of vibes on the collar.
Yeah, that's a point. Well, look, before we go into the show itself, would you want to tell our listeners a bit about yourself, what you do, and where you're going to be on Saturday, I presume?
I'm a football reporter for independent newspapers, which is one of the biggest media group in South Africa. I mean, it's got newspapers across all three major cities, Johannesburg, Cape Town, and Durban. I leave tomorrow, actually, on Friday. I mean, on Saturday, I'll be in Gabon for the Africa Cup of Nations, and I'll be following mainly, I think, Group A and Group D, because obviously Group A has the host Gabon. And the group with Zimbabwe, because there's a lot of players there. I mean, we've got like nine players who are based in South Africa or in that group. And then there's obviously Uganda that had the current African player of the year based in Africa, Dennis Onyango, who's based in South Africa. So those are some of the nations that I'll be following in Gabon.
Excellent. Well, I take it you're looking forward to it. We are looking forward to it. And let's go into our preview because, you know, while the usual suspects of Cameroon, Ivory Coast and Cote d'Ivoire, shall I say, as they're also known as, Senegal and Ghana are in the mix, there are two surprise absentees, namely Nigeria and South Africa. Now, Joseph, let me start with you, mate, because, you know Nigeria as well, you do. Why? What's with the no-show? What's going on?
Right, so it's a difficult thing to explain. But I'll try and get it, because I don't think anybody has like the full picture of what really went down. You've got a really talented squad there. I mean, I could roll off names: Iheanacho, Musa, Iwobi, Nazi, Mikel. So many great players in the team, and for one reason or another, they couldn't quite get it together. Some external influences, some internal ones. As you know, or probably know, most people know, African football in general has an issue with governance. And there was a large issue with who was actually the president of the Nigerian Football Federation at the time. Now, that uncertainty is always going to creep into the team in one way, shape, or form. So I believe that contributed to that. Mm-hmm. Now, the qualifications for the African Cup of Nations, it's a group stage with four teams, and the top ones go through automatically, and some second place best winners go together and, you know, qualify for that. Now, unfortunately, one of the teams in our group, which is Chad, had to withdraw. Okay. So, with them withdrawing for financial reasons, it meant that all the points accumulated against that team, against Chad, were withdrawn. So there was no way that the second place could go through. And in a position where, you know, we have Egypt in the group and Egypt eventually won the group, there was no way we could really qualify. However, I must say, you know, being in Nigeria over the Christmas and the New Year's and talking to a lot of Nigerians, they don't seem necessarily particularly upset that they're missing NAFCON this year. And it's quite a strange one, actually, because, you know, it's only a competition that we won fairly recently, you know, in the edition before last that we won, and we haven't qualified for the next two. But I feel like maybe the Nigerian public in general are just kind of bored of that. They want to really make a name for themselves at a higher stage, like the World Cup. Definitely when we won the African Nations in 2013, I can say for a fact that they were more excited by the Confederations Cup that we therefore went because of that than the African Nations in itself, apart from the final where we defeated Burkina Faso.
Okay.
Yes. So, I mean, Nigeria in itself, you know, it's in a much better position now. We've replaced CSCR with a foreign coach. And, yeah, it's looking good going forward. But, you know, I'm personally upset that we missed out on the African Nations.
Mm. And, Jabula, what about South Africa? They had a fantastic World Cup campaign, being the host nation, back in 2010, wasn't it? 2010? Has it been that long ago? 2010, wasn't it?
Yes, it's been that long.
Wow, time flies. So what's happened to South Africa? What's going on with them?
I think the biggest problem with us is that when we qualified for the 2015 AFCON and the way we qualified, I mean, qualifying ahead of Nigeria, I mean, the team that has just really given us troubles and the fact that they were the reigning champions, I think that kind of gave South Africa the false hope that we're there and everything was hunky-dory. So it kind of didn't allow the team to do self-introspection and try and fix some of the things that needed to be fixing, because as much as that qualifying campaign was good, there were still some issues that needed to be sorted. I mean, the team didn't do well at home. It wasn't scoring as much as it should. I think even in the two legs we played Nigeria against, those were games that we should have won, but we couldn't, because and the problem was basically winning games when you're dominant and then you have that your opponent on the back foot. So we didn't fix that problem. Went to the AFCON, were dominant against Algeria for most of that match. Got the penalty, which was a turning point. I think when we missed that penalty, Algeria gained confidence and we sort of went out, because we were in a group of death, I mean, with Ghana and also Senegal. And then after that, even in the qualifiers for this one, there was that belief that we had made it. So we didn't fix our mistakes that had arisen. And then that's why we lost to teams like Mauritania, where poor planning really cost us, because even the coach admitted that he didn't know that we were going to play in an artificial pitch. He thought we were going to play in grass because that's where they had prepared. And then they were stunned by a Mauritania side that was really motivated. And to fail to qualify in a group that had Mauritania and Gambia, I think that was embarrassing and really a wake-up call. So I think that's why the team has started so well in the World Cup qualifiers. I mean, getting a point away to Burkina Faso and then beating Senegal on home soil to be on 4 points after two games.
Fair enough. Right, so on to the actual tournament itself. And let's start with Cameroon and this incredible scandal that's rocked their preparations. I think no fewer than 8 players have decided not to play for the national team. They just said, I can't be bothered. Now, I know their coach Hugo Bruce said these players have put personal interest above those of the national team, and the Federation reserves the right to take action against these players in accordance with FIFA regulation. Joseph, what's going on with Cameroon?
Man, nothing in African football is easy. I'm going to say it like that. Because you can look at it from both angles, from the angle of the player, from the you know, the way the player sees it versus the way, you know, the Cameroonian public will see it. So, you know, you had players, you know, major players, integral players like Joel Matip, players like Eric Maxim Choupo-Moting, players like Alan Leon that would have started all of the games for Cameroon that are missing the tournament. Now, Joel Matip has gone on record and said that actually the problem is with the previous kind of interactions that he's had with the Cameroon FA, which to me could be true. But it's also a fairly bog-standard answer for an African player, because every African FA has issues, you know? You won't find a month without somebody complaining that, you know, they weren't paid on time, or a manager being changed for no reason, or just any little thing that goes on. So that might be true, but it could also be a cop-out. I don't actually quite know what to believe on that. However, I would say this. The Cameroon squad that has gone is good enough for me to challenge for the AFCON championship. So the Cameroon public shouldn't be too disheartened. However, I do believe that it is a bit of a slap in the face for Cameroon, for these Cameroon players not to go to the World Cup. And I believe that it poses like a further issue as well, because they haven't officially retired, which puts them in a really weird space with FIFA, because you're not allowed to just reject national call-ups, you know? So I'm interested to see where that kind of goes as well in terms of the future, if they wanted to go back to the Cameroonian FA or whatever, or the Cameroonian team.
It'd be an interesting one. Jabula, what have you heard about this?
As Joseph touched on, I think for me, if I was the Cameroon FA or the Cameroon coach, I would never call them up again, because I think the thing is that it's not just a showing the middle finger to the FA, it's also showing the middle finger to the fans. I mean, they've said, like Matipa said, that he's had issues with the previous FA, with the FA, but he hasn't spoken with the coach to say that these are my issues and how do we best address that, because a lot of the issues that they are not regarding in terms of the team per se or the technical team, it's personal issues with the FA. And I mean, there are a number of players who've had issues with their FAs throughout the continent. So I think for me, the biggest thing about this is that it's showing the middle finger to the public, to the fans, because I mean, Cameroon love their football and they're a force in the continent. But I think also this could be a blessing in disguise for them, because Cameroon have struggled in the past because of egos. I mean, there was a point where the team was divided on two camps, with Alex Song leading the younger players who said that they felt they were undermined, and Eto leading the experienced players who were looking at this young upstart who basically wanted to run the team. But now without these players like your Matip and Motong, there won't be egos. There will be a united team. And some of the players to say that, okay, I'm not just a backup player to Matip, but I can stand on my own and I can prove that I'm worth, I'm deserving of being here for the national team. So I think that could be good for the team, because they'll be united and there'll be that drive to say, to basically make those eight who basically excluded themselves to wish they were here when they lift the trophy.
Yeah. I guess it galvanizes them in some respects, because as you said, you know, these players have decided not to turn up. They're going to be watching it on television. They're going to see these footballers playing out of their skin, because their motivation are these star-studded footballers sitting at home. Now, when it comes to World Cup qualification and the next World Cup, is the coach going to, A, still be there for a start, and B, if he is, he's obviously going to call upon the ones that he could rely on in the first place. So, as you said, your Matips and all these other footballers, well, they might be calling it a day earlier than planned. Hey,
might I just say quickly that it's actually looking quite likely that Cameroon will qualify for the World Cup already at this early stage. You've got one team out of Nigeria, Algeria, Cameroon and Zambia that are in a group to go through to the World Cup. And Cameroon have already lost, I believe, to Algeria and to Nigeria. Yeah. So I don't know how, even if there was a way back for your Matips and your Maxim Choupo-Moting, I don't know what it is that will attract them back into the Cameroonian fold. Firstly, and then on the other side, I don't know what would make the coach, future, present or otherwise, want to bring them back. So, yeah.
Well, what if the next coach is Jurgen Klopp? I don't know, I'm joking. All right.
Yeah. But nah. Even if it was Klopp, like, Klopp needs to respect the team, man. Klopp needs to respect the fact that they have rejected their country. I'm sick of all these managers complaining about the AFCON and what it does for them. At the end of the day, it's a competition. It's an African competition. It's a continental competition that, for some reason, does not garner the same respect as other continental competitions, for one reason or another. And this, I don't think I'm reading into things when I'm seeing the rhetoric of, you know, certain managers, you know, saying certain things about, you know, it. Obviously, they're speaking from a selfish point of view. They don't want to lose their players. However, at the end of the day, they've known, you know, AFCON is in January. Deal with it. You've known about it. So what do you want to do? Do you want them to play in Africa in July when it's too hot to play? Do you want the players not to have a break? Well, what is it that you're going to come to propose? But,
you're right.
I mean, yeah.
you see, very, very passionate about this. That's why I get you back on all the time. Right, two-time quarter-finalist and host nation Gabon can call upon Borussia Dortmund striker and Real Madrid long-term target Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang to get the goals, while Sunderland's record signing Didier Ndong pulls a string in the middle of the park. Now, how much pressure do you think is on Aubameyang to deliver, Njabula?
A lot. I mean, I remember in the last when they hosted that, when they as co-hosted the Equatorial Guinea, like it was Aubameyang fever in terms of how much there was attention on him. Even the first lady was wearing his number 9 throughout their game. Wow. And there's a lot of pressure on him to basically deliver and prove that Gabon are more than just hosts. Because I think in the recent past, I mean, they haven't qualified for an AFCON except when they were hosts, because that's how they did it in 2012. And that's how they're doing it now. And they're not going to go to the World Cup also. So I think there's that thing to basically prove that it's something of a force. But I think the home support and Aubameyang alone can take them so far. Mm-hmm. They really need to prove that they're more than just Aubameyang. And I think they've got a very good team to try that. I mean, even their striker, Malik Evouna, who was with Al Ahly and is now in the UAE. He's a very good striker who can sort of pitch in with goals here and there. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge, to say that are they more than just a one-man team? Because if he's closed down, what is it that they do? Mm-hmm. And I think the coach that they have, I don't think he's that tactically astute to basically go that, because he's got a temper, his spells at Madrid and even at China have been short-lived. So it's going to be tricky, but I think they've got the crowd, they've got a star player, but I don't see them reaching the last four.
Fair point. Now, Zimbabwe is said to be the ones to watch due to their attacking prowess. I know Knowledge Musunda is doing well in Belgium, while Kamabila, they've got the Premier Soccer League's player of the season, I believe. Now, Captain Willard Castanda's experience is an assured presence at the back. Now, the Warriors are embroiled in a dispute over the qualification money owed, as far as I'm aware, as are Guinea-Bissau. Now, it's not the best preparation for the competition, but this shouldn't really stop them from giving it all, should they, Njabula?
I mean, this is like, we're used to this thing. This is like the appetizer of the AFCON, because you know that before it starts, there'll be player issues, there'll be issues about bonuses and whatnot, because I think they know that they basically have the association by the balls, because the tournament starts now. They'll meet most of their demands. So that's why most of these teams use this opportunity. But it doesn't take away in terms of the performance and what they can do, because Zimbabwe boast one of the most potent attacks in the continent. I mean, Kamabila showed what he can do when he led Sundowns to winning the Champions League. There's a Knowledge Musonda who's firing for in Belgium for Stende. A Tendai Ndoro who's doing well in the South African Premier League. I mean, he's a candidate for the Golden Boots. I think it's got like 11 goals in 12 games. So they've got a very good attack and a good protection in Katande and Piri midfield. And there's that desire to prove, because, I mean, when you look at that group, they looked at as a team that could be the whipping boys there. I mean, you've got it's a very tough group, so to speak. But when you look at how they qualified and even the time that they took to be there, I mean, this is their first appearances since 2006. So I think that's going to galvanize them to basically prove that they've been missed and try and do something out of it.
Which is one of those groups where it just seems that only two teams will qualify from it. And you're looking at Algeria and Senegal, aren't you? I mean, Tunisia, they're tough to break down, but you can't see past Algeria and Senegal getting out of that group, can you?
Yeah, especially when you look at the quality that those teams have. I think that the advantage of Zimbabwe is that they've got nothing to lose. If they finish bottom of the group, so be it. That's what people are expecting of them. So anything higher than that is going to be achievement. So when you go there with that mindset that you've got nothing to lose, then anything can happen for you, because Algeria are under pressure to perform. I mean, they've got a good squad. They've been underwhelming in the continent. I mean, although they played quite well in the last World Cup, I mean, pushing the eventual winners, German, up until extra time. But in the continent, they haven't really translated the quality and the stars that they have to something meaningful.
Absolutely. Well, Algeria, they're considered one of the favourites, which isn't really much of a surprise because they've got African Football of the Year, Riyad Mahrez, and that goal machine called Slimani, who's doing quite well at Leicester after moving from Sporting Lisbon. They've also got a whole host of European-based players, and especially one of them being Nabil Bentaleb, who seems to be a revelation at Schalke at the moment. Joseph, Mahrez, he's in form at the right time for Leicester, and you're guaranteed goals from Slimani. Personally, I think a place in the semi-finals awaits them. Do you agree?
Oof. Okay, so the last time I was in Algeria, it was against, again, Nigeria in the aforementioned World Cup qualifiers, and they lost, right? And they just didn't look impressive to me. They didn't look like they were gelling. As has been said previously, they've been quite underwhelming on the continent. However, I am banking on them to get to the final. Okay. I really am. I genuinely believe that this is their time. I think they've got so many talented players right now that you just don't see that class or that level of class spread around the whole squad in any other African team that I can see, apart from maybe Senegal. For me, the focal point of that team is not Mahrez, though. Mahrez has had a bit of an underwhelming start to the season. He's done all right, you know, in recent games and stuff, after Ranieri benched him and, you know, got a little bit of a talking to.
A bit of a wake-up call,
that's the one. But my guy in the Algerian team is Brahimi, Yassine Brahimi. That guy is possibly one of the best dribblers that we're going to see at the tournament. So confident on the ball, so effective, so efficient, and he's somebody that can really unlock African extent, you know. When you get to be AFCON, you know, you need players that have the ability to take on Stoke on a wet, muddy Tuesday. Because that's what every game is going to be there, you know. It's not going to be fully attractive football all the time. It's going to be hard as nails stuff. So you need somebody that's hard as nails, but yet has the required quality to take that over. So that's what I believe Brahim will bring to that team. And I personally believe that he will be scoring goals and assisting Slimani. Bentaleb, as you mentioned as well, he scored a screamer the other day, doing amazing at Schalke. So I'm waiting on him to do some bits as well. So yeah, I do believe they're going to get to the final if they get their act together.
Fair enough. Excellent. Now, hot on their tails will be Senegal, who feel they have a point to prove given their dismal showing at the last AFCON. Okay, albeit they were in the group of death with Algeria, funny enough, Ghana and South Africa, and Djibouti. With Sadio Mane, Mame Birim Diouf and Cheick Kouyaté in the team, you'd expect to see Senegal do much better than in 2015, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure for them to do well because they've got a very good team that I think on paper among the best in this AFCON, but that hasn't translated also to them to success. Because I remember even in the last AFCON, when you look at their firepower, I mean, they've got, I think, one of the deadliest attacks they left in the group stage. I think that's the problem with Senegal, is that you never know which side is going to pitch up. I mean, they could be deadly this day and then just capitulate on their own. So they're their own worst enemies. I think if they can get over the fact and be a team, because I think that what has hurt them in the past, they've been a group of talented individuals playing in some of the best leagues in Europe, but they haven't been a good team, which is what is needed to succeed it, especially in a tournament type of vibe where you need everyone pulling together, not just individual. I think that's going to be key. If they can be a team, then they can go far. But if they are individualistic like the way in the last AFCON, then the Liverpool fans can brace themselves for many coming back after just 1 week.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I'm a Man United fan, as is Joseph, and we're playing Liverpool on Sunday, so he's going to be there, so it doesn't matter. But look, to be fair on Mane, you know, moving aside from AFCON a little bit, personally, I think he's been one of the players of the season. He's been absolutely fantastic. You tend to find footballers that move to big clubs like your Liverpools or United for big fees. they tend to cow away. The shirt is too heavy for them. But he's taken that pressure. And okay, fair enough. Klopp has probably got a lot to do with it. But he always has been a confident player, and he always has been the type of guy to rip defenders to shreds. And you know what? He's been fantastic this season. As much as I hate to admit it, I think he's been one of the best players this year.
Yeah, I totally agree. The arrogance that that's the word I'm going to use for Romano. He's so arrogant in the way he plays football, but it just works for him. You know, there are some people that you see it and then they get tackled and you laugh at them. But he doesn't get tackled. He doesn't miss. He does everything right. So, yeah, good on him. And I hope he has a great AFCON.
It was like Mayweather. You can't hit someone that you can't see. You know, you can't foul someone that you can't catch. It's like a roadrunner.
Hey, that's it. Yeah. Mayweather.
There you go. Now, on to Group C and current holders, Cote d'Ivoire. They go into the tournament with a star-studded, powerful squad. Now, Wolf Zaha is a surprise inclusion after already representing England twice. I believe there's friendlies. Salomon Kalou, Wilfred Bonny, Kone of Sunderland, and Manchester United's Eric Bailly are the other standout names. Now, gents, this isn't going to be easy for the Ivory Coast, is it? Everyone wants to beat this team.
Well, Ivory Coast, for me, I think they've, as much as, you know, you've ruled out the names and, you know, the people that, you know, are doing amazing, the absence of the Torres is going to make a big difference for them, for me. Yaya Toure brought so much class to that team and so much calmness to the team as well, because, you know, the year they won it because they played football in a certain way. They won it because they played it in the way that Yaya Toure likes. They built up play, flew from the back. It was really, really good, you know? But for me, for Ivory Coast to be successful, it requires two people that you haven't mentioned. And one of them is a target for Everton and Chelsea. His name is Frank Kessie. He's a central midfielder, box to box. I'm just such a big fan of his. He's at Atlanta right now and he's doing bits over there. I'm just so proud of him.
Atlanta doing fantastically well in Serie A.
They're doing amazing right now. And another one is a veteran, actually, Serie Die of Basel. And he's going to bring the steel in midfield that is needed. That's probably going to be the base by which Ivory Coast launch attacks from. So it's important and imperative that these two players really fill the gap that Yaya Toure has left with his presence, you know, with his huge presence. You know, you can see from his performances at Man City when he's fit that this guy sometimes can be unplayable. So, you know, you're going to always miss somebody of his class.
Mm. Well, Serie Die is a defensive midfielder, isn't he? I mean, I know he had a spell at Stuttgart. Was it last season, the year before? But again, as you said, Toure is such an important player, and even for Manchester City, I know Man City are doing okay, but it's no surprise that the two titles that they've won, he's been, you know, the heartbeat of the side, you know. And fair enough, they mentioned Drogba and how he wasn't at the last tournament that Ivory Coast won, but as you said, Yaya Toure is just, he's an institution, isn't he, really?
For real.
Yeah. Jabula, what do you reckon, Ivory Coast? What about this squad? Because, you know, I mentioned Wilf Zaha before. I mean, how have the Cote d'Ivoire people taken to him? Because I know full, as a Manchester United fan, we know about the stories with the test that LVG gave Wilf Zaha on the American trip. I don't know if you heard about this story, in the sense that, you know, Van Gaal said to all the players, you can have the day off. There was a pre-season tournament in America. He said, you guys can have the day off. Everyone went in apart from Wilf Zaha, so he thought that's it, he doesn't have the right attitude and mentality, and he was happy to let him go. He ended up at Crystal Palace and he started off pretty well, but Alan Pardew's gone, Allardyce has come in, and again he seems to be back to his old petulant ways. How have the people taken to him, and do you think he will be a success in this tournament?
Oh, well, he's already scored in his first... they played a friendly today against Uganda, where he scored his first goal. I mean, they've really welcomed him as like a son, to say that he's finally found his mind, because he had flirted with representing England for some time. So I think for them to see him coming back home is... especially because they'll be without Jairzinho. I think he's a guy who can fill the void that'll be left for him. I think... For them, I think what's going to be key is how they handle the transition, because they've always said that the golden generation that had the pressure of lifting the Africa Cup of Nations. I mean, they finally did that in 2015, and the number of the players who were there are now no longer in the team. I think they've got only like 5 survivors of that team. So to an extent, this is a team that is in a transition. So I think how they handle that could define not only their performance in this AFCON, but also going forward. But I think that the one team that's going to decide that group is a team that might not even go far in the tournament. It's Togo, led by Claude Leroy, who's in his 9th AFCON. I mean, he's never, I think he's only failed to get out of the group stage only once with DRC in the 2013 edition. Coached, have always made it to the last 8. And he's a guy who basically who mentored Hev Renard, who's going to be who's managing Morocco. So I think that there's going to be that pressure. And the thing is that he's an old hand who knows how to get out of his teams and who knows how to do well in an AFCON. I think as much as they're not expected to be favorites in the group or even in the tournament, but they're the teams that could be the banana pill that could shape who finishes where, because I mean they're going to give all these teams Morocco, Ivory Coast and a run for their money, but they might not challenge for honors, but they could be that banana pill purely because of the influence Claude Leroy will have.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, you mentioned the word knowledge, which is quite ironic because in London, all the minicab drivers, they need to have the knowledge to drive around. And he does have the knowledge in African football. I mean, he mentioned he was coach of Congo, I believe, and then the DR Congo, Oman, Syria, Ghana.
Cameroon.
You know, he's done the rounds, you know. And if anyone's going to galvanise a team, it'll be him.
Especially when you've got a polarizing figure like Adebayo. I mean, Adebayo, there's no denying his talent. You hate him or you love him, yeah. But he's a talented individual. And he always brings his A game for Togo. He's the all-time top goal scorer. He's the most capped Togolese international. He's a leader. When he says people go, they go. So I think those two, I mean, the experience and the knowledge that they have will be key. Adebayo and Claude Leroy.
Is he still at Crystal Palace, Adebayo?
No. He's unattached right now.
He doesn't have a club. Yeah.
Well, listen, Adebayo, he's one of these footballers that once he joins the team on loan, he'll get you 20 goals, but then when he signs permanently, he just can't be
bothered. It's been like that, right? Listen, I think everyone really thought it was a world beater when it was in Real Madrid, but I could see it was all a sham.
He's the biggest, he's the best salesman in the world, mate.
Hey, for real. That's what he is.
Best salesman. No, mate.
I mean, don't worry, I'll talk more about Adebayo later. But I really do like that Togo team, that Togolese team. I like Claude Leroy. I like the way that he sets up his team from early. So I'll be excited to see what they bring to that group. I don't think they'll make it out of the group, but I'm excited what they'll bring.
Enough. And so Morocco might as well be. Morocco's preparations have been dealt a blow as Amrabat, Boufal, they're both Watford and Southampton, Tanana, Saint-Étienne, they pulled out of the squad through injury, but in Willy Renard they have a head coach who knows the competition better than the back of his hand. Two-time winner with Zambia in 2012 and Ivory Coast in 2015. Now, Joseph, Renard says quarter-final qualification is the minimum requirement, mate. Tough ask, though. I mean, the blighted by injuries.
I mean, it's very tough. I mean, firstly, I must say that I less so for Amrabat, more so for Boufal, because he's probably my favourite player in the Premier League right now, probably the best dribbler in the Premier League, and was actually going to be my tip for player of the African Nations, before he pulled out for injury. I don't know how serious the injury is, to be fair, but I don't want to speculate too much about it. I'm just speculating. But it is a very difficult task for them. With everybody that's dropped out, I don't see how they're going to be successful in this tournament, I'll be honest. Because I'm looking at that team and I'm thinking, and I'm watching them play and I'm thinking, who's really going to take this team forward on the pitch? In Renard, they have a very great manager, somebody who's won the African Nations twice, who wants to win it a third time with 3 different teams, which is unheard of. But I'm just looking for leaders on the pitch. You've got players like Belhanda, who's going to be very important. very extremely important for that Morocco team. So if they can get the play around him, I believe that maybe they can get somewhere. But those two big losses, especially in Amrabat and especially Boufal, are really going to hurt the team. But again, I'll be excited to see how it pans out.
Where do you think they'll go in the tournament?
Wow. I mean...
Okay, before the injuries, what would you have said?
Okay, so before the injuries, I believe that Amrabat, Boufal, players that can get on the ball and attack one versus one, those are the type of players you need to win an African Cup of Nations. And they would have easily gone to the semi-final for me. Now, with those players gone, it becomes more difficult to predict. There's just so many variables and there's so many hidden components that I might know of. I'm unaware of. And they might just come to the floor and just, you know, play a banging game, or the goalkeeper might just make a mistake with the ball bouncing in front of him because of a poor pitch. This is what happens in the African Cup of Nations. So it's very difficult to predict. I do want them to succeed. However, I don't actually think they're going to make it out of the group.
You of little faith, as they say.
That's me.
Well, they've got Benatia, who's a pretty decent captain, has he not?
Yeah! Benatia is... okay, so when he was at Bayern Munich?
Yeah, he was there last season, yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, sorry, I had to make sure I got that right.
I called them Monaco, don't worry about it.
fair enough, but no. When he was at Bayern Munich, I really did think that this guy is legit. And I believe he moved to Juve? Was it Juve?
Yeah.
Or Juve. Okay, so since his move to Juve, I haven't seen much of him, I'll be honest. I don't personally see him as a real leader of men in the John Terry mode, in your typical leadership role. He might be an atypical type leader, you know, never know. But looking at in terms of face value, I just don't see where Morocco are really going to get these wins from, personally.
Fair enough, okay. Well, Ghana can boost just as... You know what, I can't even read these days. Wow, blimey. See, the joys of live shows, ladies and gents. Ghana can boast just as many star names as the Ivory Coast. Asamoah, Jean, Jordan and Andre Ayew, Jonathan Mensah, Baba Rahman. The list goes on. Amati, Atsu, they're all hoping to lead the Black Stars to glory. But, you know, I was actually even surprised to hear that Avram Grant is still the head coach. I mean, the word quirky springs to mind. Jabula, listen, mate, in all the years Avram Grant has been coaching, I haven't heard a bad word said about him. I mean, players rate him. They feel he's a good motivator. I mean, I know his contract is up next month and he's been linked with Melbourne City. Do you think that's going to disrupt the squad anyway?
Not really, because, I mean, he's had several fights with the Ghanaian FA to a point where they're even threatening. I think at one point it looked like he was going to quit. So in terms of instability, such doesn't exist in African football. I mean, they just go out there and play. Because I remember when they had qualified for the AFCON, they had a game to spare. That he was preparation for the World Cup qualifiers. And he named a squad of some, including overseas-based players. And then just a week before it was played, the FA said, nah, we don't have money. Choose local-based players. We've already qualified for the AFCON. Why do you need them? And then they had a fight about that. I think the thing is that when you look at how Ghana have been and the things that they've done in the last four AFCONs, I mean, constantly in the top four, there's a feeling that it's about time that they are African champions, just as it was the case with Ivory Coast before that. I mean, you've got these quality players, you've done quite well here. Like, finally, like you just need that one push to basically win it. Because in Avram Grant's first AFCON with Ghana, he lost in penalties in the final to Ivory Coast. I mean, that's not something to be embarrassed about. But so when you look at what he's done in a short space of time, I mean, it shows that the good job that he's doing. So there's that belief that they can finally be African champions. But to do that, they have to first go past the most successful African country in terms of the AFCON, seven-time champions, Egypt, and in what I, for me, is a group of death.
And that final you mentioned, I mean, I remember it went to like 11 penalties, didn't it? I think the goalkeepers did like taking them at the end, didn't they?
Yeah.
It was incredible.
A very cool keeper ended up scoring the winning goal. That's right. After having pretended to be injured throughout those penalties.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Right, Egypt, they're joint favourites with Ghana's advance from the group. Salah and El Neni are the two recognisable names, although El Hadri in goal has been involved in Egypt's last three AFCON wins. Now, gents, Egypt missed out on the last three tournaments. I know head coach Hector Cooper will hope your side can carry its run of 12 wins from the last 17 games into the competition, won't he?
Yeah. So, Egypt's, as you just said, seven out, you know, however many games, they've just been so efficient as to the way they play football. I really take an interest in Egypt as a football nation, because as you said, they're the most successful in the continent. The way they play football works. They have such a great domestic league, and players that they therefore choose are from that domestic league. We don't see, you know, it's a quite a trend actually. They don't see so many external players. You see a lot of homegrown players. There's a homegrown contingent, and with that, you know, it offers a level of mysticism for the watcher of football like me, who really watches African or European-based African players. So I look at that Egyptian team, and yes, the names you mentioned are great and stuff, but I'm a lot more interested into actually the way that they play. Any player can really come in and do a job. It's like they have a very rigid system as to how they play their football. They have a very organized system, something you don't find in the African nations a lot. The trend of the African nations is we go where the ball is, basically, you know? So, yeah, for real, you go where the ball is and you go play football. It's five-a-side, do whatever you like. But I think Egypt have always come with a level of organisation which has always been appreciated. And I do believe that they have a fairly good chance, you know, even without so many of the star names like the other teams do. So, yeah, that's really neat.
But if you look at Hector Cooper and the teams that he's managed, you know, Mallorca had that fantastic run that got to the Cup Winners' Cup final, I think, was it 99, I believe, when they lost to Lazio. You know, he's managed Valencia, Inter Milan, the list goes on. Parma, he was the Georgia national team manager. He's got the credentials. I mean, I know a lot of people say that he's very boring, you know, but he's very meticulous in what he does as well. And with this Egypt team, as I said, they're there to prove a point. You know, missing on the last three. I mean, didn't they win back-to-back AFCONs at one point? Am I right?
Yeah, of course.
They won back-to-back and they didn't qualify for the next three. So they've got a point to prove here. And I think with this manager, you're not going to see, you know, aesthetically pleasing football. But as you said, Joseph, it's going to be organised. They're going to be set a certain way. I wouldn't be surprised if they go with a 4-5-1, to be fair.
Hey. You're probably right. I mean, you know what it is? Just a quick comment. They defeated Nigeria at their home and drew away at Nigeria with a last-minute Mohamed Salah goal. And watching them there, I mean, you could see the difference in terms of how they put their team out. They had an identity. And that is something that more teams are getting to know, but Egypt have been the master of that from way back.
Yeah.
So with this new coach bringing them back to that, I believe it can only do good for them.
I agree. And the thing is, I think the winner of this tournament is going to be a team with the most informed players. Now, I know Salah's got 8 goals in Serie A this season, got 4 assists. But, you know, you're looking at the rest of the teams, like your Senegals, your Ghanas, your Ivory Coast. They've got a collective of players that are in form at the moment. But before we wrap the show up, gents, are there any standout or hidden talents we should be looking out for? You know, like when you look on Championship Manager or Football Manager, people saying, oh, this one is a wonder kid. Which players? Can you pick a group of players, both of you, from this tournament that you can say, right, watch out for these ones, because not many people know about them, but they could be doing a few bits and bobs in this tournament?
Right. Yeah.
Anyone?
go first. Injabulo, please go first.
Well, for me, I think for in terms of Gabon, obviously all eyes will be on Emerick. I mean, for obvious reason, he's done quite well for himself. He's one of the most recognizable figures and has lit up Europe. But I think Malik Evouna, I've seen bits of him in terms of what it did for Al Ahly in the Champions League. If he can be given enough room and not just be there as a supporting act to Emerick, but given that responsibility to also pitch up and up front, I think he could be a force. I think the same with Kamapilat from Zimbabwe. I think the continent saw glimpses of him when he led Sundowns to winning the Champions League. But in terms of the maturity that he showed from that phase, I mean, he's grown to be more than just a star player to shine. But I think what he's done quite well is how he's made the team play when he's been the one who basically make his teammates play. I think he's the one knowledge Musona is going to shine because of having a Kamapilat around. So I think what he's done quite well of late is play more for the team, not just for himself. So I think that he's someone to look out for.
Excellent. Joseph, what you got?
Right, so I've got
he's
five.
Got a list as long as his arm.
wait. No. So I've got five players, right? Now, three of them have come as a result of an unfortunate injury that Bolasie has. Now, Bolasie, I was really looking forward to seeing him light up the tournament with his skills, with his pace, with the race, with everything that he's got in the locker. However, there is a silver lining. On the left side of the defence, the left back, Joyce Lomelisa. Now, I saw him play a few times, actually. This guy is, for me, the real deal. He's 23, still plays in Congo for AS Vita. And he was, in the matches I saw, he was fit, he was agile, he was running up and down the flank, he was an attacking outlet, he was good on the ball defensively, he's fast and he's strong. And he was somebody that, with the space that Bolasie was creating, would bomb down that left-hand side. So he's somebody that, you know, should be looked at, especially for those with the large saves on Football Manager. Now, as a result, the other two players are again as a result of Bolasie not in the team. It opens up a space in that attacking midfield berth for two players. I think only one of them are going to start, but they're both playing in England. The first one is Jordan Bataka. Now, I don't know if anybody's seen him here, but the guy with his dreads, he's got the same Arsenal Bolasie has, to be fair.
Okay.
He's fast and strong. He's got so many skills. I mean, there was one skill that I retweeted on Twitter one time. I almost died. It was unbelievable. Unfortunately, his problem is consistency. So he plays for Leeds right now. I think he's on loan, actually, to Charlton in League One, I believe.
Okay.
So really for him to, you know, to really step up to the plate, really make that position his, really stamp his authority in the African continent, because I believe he has the ability to do it. But if not, then there's another person, right, who plays for Fulham, and his name is Neskes Cabano. Now, I've seen him not play for Congo, but I've seen him play for Fulham, and he's basically Sonny Aluka with a right foot.
Okay.
Low gravity, skills, he can shoot, he can do all of that. He plays normally in an attacking midfield in a central position, but I believe that any one of those two guys can fill Bolasie's position and make it their own, really. The last two have been mentioned already, actually, in the course of the show. The first one is the CAF African Player of the Year, Dennis Onyango of Uganda. Now, if you look at their group, you know, he's going to be tested a lot. So, really, I'm looking for him to show his quality and maybe see him move to another club, actually, to get a European deal, possibly, because his performances in the CAF competition were absolutely immense. And the last one is my main guy. He's unattached right now, and he needs a club, and his name is Emmanuel Adebayo.
You're his agent, aren't you?
Yeah. Actually, it's funny. My cousins are actually the Adebayos, so without the R. So, yeah. Eman, I'm helping you out. But no, for real, this guy, I don't understand why. He needs to just lower his wage demands or something and realise that actually this guy has so much to offer to the world of football. when he played, like, you can't help, but even if you're an Arsenal fan, you can't help but smile the time that he scored with Tottenham and ran to the other end of the pitch and started celebrating in front of you, man. That was brilliant. These are the kind of things that we don't see him for. We don't see the drama anymore, you know. We just see bog standard interviews with people and say, oh yeah, match was good, oh yeah, we could do better, oh, we work together as a team. No, Adebayo will give you so much more, both on and off the pitch. So he's one of my picks to watch this AFCON.
Excellent, wonderful. And I'm going to do this quickly. Gun to your heads, who wins it?
Senegal.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Nerulo.
Ghana.
You're going with Ghana. Okay. I'm going to go Algeria. Yeah. I said that at the beginning, okay. I'm going to go with them. I'll go with them.
All right, cool.
Well, guys, look, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you ever so much for agreeing to appear. I know you're an hour ahead out there in Jabulo, and mate, I hope wish you a safe journey. Enjoy the tournament, and when you come back, please, you're more than welcome to reappear on the show and give us your opinion on what you saw out there. And Joseph, mate, you need to come on next week when the
just tell me when I make it happen.
Before I let you guys go, do you want to give our listeners your Twitter handles, Jabulo?
Oh, mine, it's Njabulo N. That's N-J-A-B-U-L-O-N.
Excellent.
And mine is at Mr. Joey, J-O-E-Y, Lash, L-A-S-H.
Excellent. Well, guys, you can follow us at Shoot the Defence. You can follow me at On A Madnesses, because I do silly things like not being able to read scripts. Evidently so. Anyway, guys, thank you very much for agreeing to appear on the show. Guys, if you're watching or listening, we'll be back very soon. Take care now.